Welcome to Kinfolk War. We're excited to share our love for some of our favorite stories. This season, we're exploring the politics of one of our most beloved fantasy worlds. We are back in Westeros to cover House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Andrea.
And she's weaving dragons of green and red, dragons back and forth, up and down. And I'm Paul. And our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and Lovecraft Country, and we have loved every moment of it. We're excited to dive into the larger canon of A Song of Ice and Fire and talk about the history of this expansive world.
This week, we'll be discussing the 7th episode of House of the Dragon, titled Driftmark, which aired on HBO this past Sunday. I don't know what to say to you if you haven't seen it.
Don't know.
So much stuff happened.
So much.
So, like, please, go watch it. Go watch it twice. And then come back and listen. We won't be talking about spoilers from the future events in the books. We will be talking about some of the differences between the book, Fire and Blood. We'll also be talking about A Game of Thrones, but we won't be spoiling anything in the future.
And Kinfolk Lore will have adult content. So if you're here for parents skipping bedtime for tent time, you've come to the right place. Also, when did the Targs learn that thing they do with their tongue? Because Balon's boys are looking really bad out here in the streets with the over-the-shoulder shots of the women experiencing them.
Wow.
Balon's boys looking real bad in the streets. When did the Targs get that? When did that happen?
In the streets or in the sheets?
In the sheets. Oh my god. Those over and like Rhaenyra looks very unimpressed with Daemon right now. And as did Alicent with Viserys. I was just sitting here like this over the shoulder shot is not helping them.
It's really not. It's really not. All right, let's talk about some of the important plot points from this episode. The episode starts at a very sad and funeral and a very awkward repast for Lady Lena Velaryon. The entire royal family, and I'm using family as a very loose term because these folks don't act like family, is present. Rhaenyra continues to get the cold shoulder from nearly everyone. Daemon exchanges words with his brother Viserys. Aegon gets just totally wasted. A great showing from Aegon. And all of House Velaryon is really struggling with their grief. While Corlys and Rhaenys discuss the future of Driftmark and their legacy, Rhaenyra and Daemon take a little, a little walk on the beach.
On the beach.
Where they couple for real this time.
Coupling. In the bowels of a pleasure house.
Meanwhile, still stewing over the pink dread, which was actually a pretty funny prank.
Yeah.
Aemon decides that he's going to claim the biggest, baddest dragon around, Vhagar, which leads to a fight between Jace, Luke, Baela, and Rhaena. Oh, and Aemon, obviously. He's there.
Yeah.
In the fight, Luke slashes Aemon in the face just before the Kingsguard arrives and breaks up the fight. While the Maester says that it's a flesh wound that will heal, Aemon loses his eye.
Ouch.
After the fight, an angry Viserys questions the children. And Rhaenyra tells him that Aemon has called her sons bastards and must be questioned about it. Viserys warns everyone that no one is to talk about the parentage of the princes again, and he asks everyone to apologize.
And then Alicent, what a slip. Her husband's doing it, why wouldn't I, Alicent demands justice and wants an eye for an eye. When everyone refuses her request, she charges towards Rhaenyra and her children herself with the cat's paw dagger and cuts Rhaenyra's arm in the process. Afterwards, Otto Hightower visits his daughter and tells her that he was glad to see that she had this side in her because we play an ugly game. And on those and on the way back to King's Landing, she shores up Laris's support for her cause. While on Driftmark, Rhaenyra shores up her support with her uncle with a marriage proposal. Rhaenyra and Daemon hatch a plan that will allow them to marry and set Laenor free. They will arrange for Ser Kahl to fight with Laenor and kill him with a witness. But instead, they will fake his death using a body double while he and Kahl escape to Essos, free of the life that he never wanted. Rhaenyra and Daemon marry in a Valyrian ceremony with all the children there to watch. A little blood right thing. It was pretty cool. I liked it.
I think we need to pour one out for Prince Aemon's eye.
I don't want to.
And
I,
also...
Fuck that. Not a drop for that guy's eye. Fuck it. No.
But, okay, okay.
He punched Bela. No way.
Yeah, I was pretty upset by that. But okay, okay, okay. But what about the random, you know, servant of the Valyrians who got snuffed
random
out?
Random guy who got Daemon snuffed out by Daemon and thrown in the fire definitely gets one poured out for him. Let's pour one out for random... What do we call him?
I don't know. What was this guy? Was he was like a manservant?
Oh, man. Let's pour one out for the burnt up manservant.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
Pull out a little liquor.
We're not right for this.
Don't let the gin get like that, y'all.
I'm glad these are fictional people. Okay. Let's unpack this funeral slash repast. Let me just say, for those of you who are listening who don't know what a repast is, it is the after funeral event, very popular amongst Black folk, and this one was not what I'm used to.
No, this was, just, they had nothing.
It was not.
There was no
what
good
I'm
food.
To.
There was very it little was, conversation. The conversation,
they had booze going though.
The booze was flowing. The booze was flowing. Yeah. It was rough. Rough repast. Very quick too. Very tense. And Otto's back as hand.
I like how the show just kind of yada yada over that. We don't need to know what the decision making was. It's just Otto's back. It's just accept it. Like Lionel's dead. There's no other worthy people in all of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah.
So we had to bring back Otto.
I mean, and Vayman should have might as well just started preaching a sermon. He was like, you got some bastards in your house. The house has some bastards. The blood is not thick enough. I was like, yo, what are you doing, bro? Like, you're out here like giving all of this shade. What was he thinking?
You know I don't like Vayman.
No.
I've been off of Vayman from the first episode that he appeared in because I'm still wondering what his letter to the king about the Stepstones was all about. He was snitching.
Yo, I don't understand that. I mean, and why do you think Daemon just laughs at him because he's being ridiculous? Like, why do you think he's laughing?
Yeah, I think Daemon was just like, what? You know how there's always that one family member who is like, I can't deal with any of this.
Yeah.
Like, this is why I moved away.
Yeah.
That's Daemon.
Yes.
100%. He's like, these people are ridiculous. Like, he just thinks the whole thing. Like, yes, I think that Daemon cared about Laena. He pretty much says so. He doesn't say that he loved her, but he does say that they were happy enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he is sad, but I think he also just thinks that, like, the pretense, all of this, like... If you have something to say, Vayman, just say it. I think that's Daemon's point of view. Just say it.
Yeah, because he's going, all of this, our blood runs thick. It can never be watered down. It could not. I'm like, bro, what are you doing? This is too much. Like, what are you talking about?
Just doing the most and staring at Rhaenyra and her kids. And this is my biggest problem with this whole episode is I get it. Y'all not happy that, you know, Rhaenyra and Laenor didn't have kids together. Whatever. You don't know their life. You don't know their agreement. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But okay, whatever. You want to be judgmental. But why are you making the kids feel uncomfortable? They didn't ask to be born into this situation.
At all. At all.
Yeah, I mean, it was. And speaking of the kids, it was really nice to see that scene. It was like interesting to see that scene with Jace trying to comfort like Bela and Reyna, and he doesn't quite know how to do it, and he's also feeling in his feelings because, as he rightfully says, he's like, "Yo, I should be at Harrenhal. Yeah. Like, why are we here?" To which, you know, obviously Rhaenyra's like, "Yo, we gotta listen, bro. You don't understand. I got mad pressure right now. I need you to. That is not your dad, okay?"
You know who should be at Harrenhal?
Larys.
The Lord of Harrenhal?
Yeah, the Larys Lord Strong. Of Harrenhal, Larys Strong, should be at fucking Harrenhal. What is he doing at this funeral? Looking creepily looking at the queen. Like, even her facial expression when she looks over at him and sees him, she's like, ooh. And freaking Crispy is like, Lionel Strong's son is like looking at you. Oh, it's just a feeling of pride. No, she is shook. She's like, why is he looking at me like this? This shit is creepy.
Can we talk about this a little bit? Yeah. I was going to leave this for the end of the episode, but I got to get it off my chest. What do you care, Crispy?
I have
a you know I have questions about Crispy in this episode. Why do you care who's looking at the queen, and why are you whispering her ear about it like she owes you an explanation? She don't owe you nothing. You are her sworn protector. That's it. Does he not understand this is a job?
No, he don't understand it's a job. Second of all, those lines have been blurred, and third of all, he wasn't around when the fight broke out. So like, I'm thinking like, where was he? Where was he?
Mm-hmm.
Whose bedchamber was he in?
And Viserys wanted to know where he was too.
He was supposed to be on the watch.
This is the only part of the episode that I agreed with Viserys. When he was like, "Why? How did this happen?"
Yeah.
Well, you were supposed to be on the watch. I was like, exactly. Where were you, Sir Crispy?
Yeah.
Where were you? I still want to know where he was. I have, you know, my theory, but I would like to know what's going on with him and Allison.
Yeah, my theory is that something's going on with him and Allison at this point. And you could tell by the way that they looked off all mad and everything when Viserys calls Allison Emma that they're like kind of, there's some shade. So, you know, you're going to take all that anger energy, because nobody was care. Listen, everybody was so in their fucking feelings and what was going on with them that nobody cared about was talking to these children. Other than the Velaryons. The Velaryons are the only people comforting these children.
Yeah, it's really true.
Like, you know, Rhaenyra really goes true. And talks to her kids, but then she leaves them. Like, she's like, oh, yeah, bedtime. Go to bed. I'm going to creep off here with my uncle. Like, I'm out. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
I mean, that's fair. And I really don't think the fight would have happened if Daemon had been around. I don't think his girls go wake up Jace if they can find their dad.
Yeah, they would have woke up Daemon. And Daemon would
Yeah, they don't. It doesn't seem like they know Jace like that. They would have woke up their dad.
Yeah.
So all of this can be laid at the feet of the adults. But we digress. Let's get back to this repast, because, man, there was some good stuff in here.
Well, one of my favorites was, no matter how fat the leech gets, it always wants for another meal. Daemon hitting Otto with that was really, really great, because it's so accurate. It's like when the accuracy is just like on point, you're just like, yeah, he's right. I mean, this guy's a fucking leech. He's just right back for more.
Yeah, I have to say, I wasn't expecting to feel this way, but I actually really felt sorry for Daemon in this episode. Yeah. Like, there were a lot of moments that I actually frankly found his behavior relatable. Like Viserys trying to be like, oh, come back. You know, I can have find a place for you in your my court. I was like, okay, but like, that's not where we're at right now. Like, before any of that can happen, we need to have a moment of reconciliation and talk about what's gone down and talk about the fact that you bought back Otto, who was the same dude who is the reason I left the court in the first place. I'm not defending Daemon and saying that Viserys was wrong in throwing him out. I think Viserys was right in throwing him out. But that said, Viserys seems to think that these two can just beef and then like make up without actually discussing what transpired. And that's just not how it works.
He's a very forgiving dude, but he's misguided in that sometimes, because I think he forgives to let himself off the hook, not because he really understands the damage that he's caused other people, or the hurt he's caused other people. He's just like, oh yeah, I forgive you, so you should forgive me. No, that's not how that works. You gotta do some work.
Yeah, and I feel like in this episode and in the previous episode, Allison and Rhaenyra are doing a lot of work to address the tension at court in different ways, right? Rhaenyra comes with sort of like this agreement, like, can we join our two lines? And Allison is working in the other way to undermine Rhaenyra and bandy about this rumor. You know who's not doing any work aside from saying, can everybody just get along? We won't speak of this again. Yeah. I'll cut out the tongue of anyone who says this is Viserys. Yeah. He just doesn't want to deal with the conflict. You have to address these conflicts head on. Everything is happening in whispers, and it doesn't have to be that way.
That's where we're a little on a different page with like the Viserys' call on Daemon. I actually think that this repass shows Daemon's theory about how things were going to go to be accurate, and that although he was married and Daemon murdered his wife, and we're not hand waving that, all that shit was terrible, right? But
I love this show. Yeah, and then he committed some murder, and anyway,
a little murder. The thing is that his main beef is that not about like his wife or anything else, or needing to get married. His main beef is like, you're weakening our line by elevating all these other people in the name of like honor and all this stuff, and these people are coming to kill us. Like, you don't understand. Like, make me your hand. Make me the person that swats these people away for you. Like, let me be, you're not the strongest person, but let me be your strength. And in the scene where he walks up to him and he basically says, the gods can be cruel, and then, you know, Daemon's like, and it seems like they've been particularly cruel to you. I think he has to agree, but I mean, he's trying to still make the peace. But the reason I think that Daemon's feeling this way is like, you've pushed me away at every turn, sometimes rightfully, sometimes wrongfully. But the one thing that you should have known is even if I did a lot of fucked up things, I am your brother. And I never attempted to hurt you, honestly. And you should have trusted me to keep everybody else off you. And you never did. And now it's too late.
I guess we don't agree. We don't disagree on the initial banishment from court. I think that was I think we both agree that he shouldn't have banished him at that point. Yeah. I was speaking to when the last time he threw him out.
Oh, when he tried to
seduce his niece. Yeah, I think like that one was justified.
Maybe, even though... but here's the thing. Think about this. Let's say, for example, that the king says, I'm going to marry you to Laenor, and this is just what it's going to be, and the rumors swirl around. The point Daemon was making is that people will believe what you tell them to, just like he's trying to do right now if he did that early, because you tell them, I don't care what you think, this is what I'm doing, right? And while I don't necessarily agree with that style of ruling, it's still like possible that he could have killed some of this with a little show of strength. And one of the things I think Daemon's would have helped with this is, let's say that there is no harm when strong. Let's say that Laenor and Rhaenyra get married for the good of the realm, and then, you know, it's Daemon and Rhaenyra, and now all of a sudden you have actual Valyrian blood children and Targaryens. Now there's no freaking conflict right now. Like there's nothing that that they can say about bastard this or strongs this. It's done. Like, she is the heir and she has heirs.
I guess my problem with that is Daemon is unpredictable, and he proves himself to be an untrustworthy actor in the exchange with Rhaenyra when she was a teenager.
Yeah, that's true. That is fair.
And so I hear what you're saying. I think you're right about like Daemon's diagnosis of the situation. I just think that that last incident was so egregious that he didn't leave Viserys much choice. And not that it mattered, because because he got banished on Tuesday and he was back at court on Saturday. So yeah. It didn't really make a difference.
It's just, I guess the thing I get upset about is that, not upset, but just like I think about it, this just feels so much like the House of Windsor. It's like everybody tries to keep people apart from getting married and then they end up getting married anyway. And then there was a whole lot of collateral damage for no reason. Like Rhaenyra and Daemon mm-hmm. are legit married now. I know we haven't gotten there yet, but it's like you did all this and it happened anyway.
No, I totally agree with that part. I think it would have been trickier. I think Viserys didn't have much choice in the marrying Daemon and Rhaenyra because Daemon was already married.
Yeah.
And there was not, you know, the realm has gone to war over that before, so it was like,
yeah, it's true.
You know.
I think we got to talk about Aegon being in his cups and lamenting having to marry his sister as she like talks about threads of green and threads of black. And
I love her.
Yeah, she's great.
You know what? You know who had a good time at this repast? Helaena. Like, she was fine.
She'd be trying to warn them.
She don't care what these adults are doing.
She's trying to warn them. She keeps trying to give them like info. She'd be like, hey, y'all, listen, I got like, let's just say like previous episode, we couldn't talk about it. So we'll talk about it now. She did tell that he would not get a dragon until he lost an eye. Like so what is she saying? What do you think she's trying to hint at with this conversation, the prophecy or what she's saying in this moment? So we're finding out that Helaena is a seer because this is what she talked about. Exactly what happened is what we saw happen later on in the episode. So what do you think she's meaning in her like conversation when she's saying hand turns loom, spool of green, spool of black, dragons of flesh weaving, dragons of thread, hands turn loom, spool of green. What do you think she's talking about?
I have like a very particular theory about what she's saying exactly, and I won't say that because I think that would spoil the story for people. Uh-huh. But I do think she's talking about the upcoming Well, let's just say it, the conflict that started this episode that got kind of solidified, where we have Rhaenyra actually referring to Allison and her folks as the Greens. So I think she's giving kind of like an overview of that, and she's diagnosing it is it started with the hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I read into what she said. I have another theory. Well, it's a similar theory, but just with a little bit more detail. About what she's saying here. I just think this is not in the books. Mm-hmm. There's very little in Fire and Blood about Helaena Targaryen. So I'm sort of hyped that they gave her something to do mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. in the book, she's just a sweet girl. There's no real detail about her until much later. We don't get to know her very well as a child. And I really like that she's a dreamer. The very thing that Viserys has said that he admires so much. He cares more about, you know, the Targaryen dreamers than the dragon riders. And Helaena is both.
Yeah. And it's so wild that you don't see very much interaction between the two of them, because you would think he would want to know more about what she thought. I mean, the very reason that their existence in the Seven Kingdoms is because Daenys the Dreamer's father believed her in what she was saying, right? So he talks about the histories, but he doesn't always like act out on what they show you. And I thought that, you know, she should be someone who he's asking things or hanging out with to gain things, because she's giving things ahead of time. Like, you know, for me, I think it's exactly, I feel the same way that what you said, but I also think it's very interesting that she's talking about a hand turn, which is kind of like a tool, an ancient tool to weave. And I think like it's interesting about like that like she's talking about the weaving a fabric of a family and a family and how it's, you know, unspooling and spooling together at the same time, the alliances that are being formed. And I just find that it's fascinating that he's not around her and paying more attention or has even picked up that she can actually prophesize.
Yeah, I don't think Allison understands
mm-hmm. no.
what's happening no. with her. And if Allison doesn't, I don't think Viserys does. And it's just a real shame because, you know, Otto is celebrating Aemon's victory. And I'm like, but y'all have a dreamer here. Like, she saved, you know, this family from dying in the doom, like the previous dreamer, like you should, this is a big deal. And I almost feel like Allison should recognize this, because when Viserys was talking about dreamers and how important it was and how there isn't one, you know, there's like one every generation or so, but they're not as popular as frequent as dragon riders. He was talking to Allison. Yeah. So I hope that she picks up on this, because this is, Helena's has an ability that's really dope. And I'm just happy to have magic in this story that isn't related to dragons.
Yeah, agreed.
Like I'm really glad to have magic in the story that isn't just like, this is not just politics with dragons. Like there's other magic in the story, and there's not as much potential in Fire and Blood for like magic that's not related to dragons. So I like that they injected this in the story, because it reminds us this is a fantasy story. So there's all kinds of possibilities.
There's warging into rats. Sorry, I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it.
Don't bring up that. I'm not talking about the rat.
I know. It's just, I couldn't help myself. I've been reading all this stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh, are we really going here? This is how you know Thrones is back. Westeros is back. We're talking about warging into rats.
I spent way too much time reading about Varys being a potential mermaid. I'm not doing merman. I'm not doing this with y'all, okay? I'm not doing it.
Oh my gosh, man. It's so true. So what do we think about this conversation that happens after the repass with Rhaenys and Corlys? Obviously, Rhaenyra and Daemon kind of sneak off onto the beach, but let's start with Rhaenys and Corlys. Like, what do we think of what happens in that convo?
I love this dialogue.
Yeah.
I love this dialogue. I thought this was actually one of the most profound scenes in the whole episode, even though this episode has a lot to offer. Mm-hmm. We have Corlys having this beautiful moment about legacy, and we have Rhaenys calling him out on his fake wokeism and reminding him that he can pass Driftmark through his daughter's line. And so I really love this exchange, because it felt so real, actually. You know, so many of the exchanges in the story don't feel like they're talking in riddles, and they're not saying what's really happening. They're avoiding saying what is on their minds, what the real issue is. Not in this episode. Mm-hmm. There's a lot unpacked here and a lot of honesty. And I really admired it. I really, really thought that this conversation, though difficult, between Corlys and Rhaenys was necessary. They obviously see the situation they're in very differently. Now, I will say this. I think Rhaenys is looking to assign blame for her daughter's death. Mm-hmm. I don't think it would have mattered if Lena was in Westeros versus Pentos. No. I think that it's very likely that that Lena would have died regardless. And even if she had been in Westeros, it's possible she would have made the same decision based on what the Maesters were saying, mm-hmm. right? So I think that is a lot of grieving people do. She's looking for someone to blame, but I don't blame Daemon for this. But I also think that she's the only person in this episode who advances the future of her granddaughters. No one else is really there for them. Not their father. Definitely not. What is Rhaenyra to them? Their auntie? Yeah,
their aunt.
Yeah, I guess she's their aunt /
They related. Some kind of way. They related. They talks. They related. It's just everybody's related. They just all together.
But their grandmother is really the only one who really stands up for them multiple times. She does later in the fight as well. She's the one who goes to them first. And so I love this conversation. It made me like both Rhaenys and Corlys a little bit more, even though it was an argument. And they walked away from this conversation at, you know, opposing views. I think that the way that Corlys apparently accepts Jace, Luke, and Joffrey as his grandchildren is really endearing. He doesn't seem bitter about it. He genuinely seemed, you know, that conversation he had with Luke where Luke had his "I don't want it" moment.
It runs in the blood, obviously. There we go.
He, you know, that seemed genuine. Like he really was like trying to mentor his grandson. Yeah. And when Rhaenys is like, "These are not your grandchildren," he's like, "But you want me to cast a shadow on them?" Like,
yeah.
He seems appalled when she speaks into truth what they both know, which is these are not his grandchildren. These are not their grandchildren. So I really loved him for that. I really loved her for calling him on his bullshit about, you know.
Yeah, let's stop this. Let's stop this whole like you're doing this for your wife who is aggrieved. Like, I let go of being on the throne a long time ago. This is for you and your pride and your desire to have it, and either through you or through the scions of your house. I thought that was like a very important statement to finally be said. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and it finally gets him to fess up, right? He fesses up with the, what is this brief mortal life if not the pursuit of legacy? And I thought that was, you know, really, really powerful. And then to like say, you know what, and to make us all think, like, do we remember who was biologically attached? Do we remember the name that was attached to the person? Who history remembers names, he says. And I think that was a powerful statement. Obviously, we've heard this over some of the previews and the voiceovers, but I think one is fairly interesting that the show has made the choice to highlight Corliss's voiceovers in a lot of the promo material. But I also think that it's in world, in the story, I found it very fascinating and kind of like a interesting, you know, reminder of like people who pursue legacy and pursue these things. It reminded me of Tywin, you know, do you know what legacy means? Is what you pass down to your children and your children's children. It's what remains of you when you're gone. It's the first time I felt like Corliss is, even though playing the Game of Thrones, I always felt like he was like moving like in this like kind of like semi-noble way, but this is like, nah, I'm moving my pieces and I'm not gonna let up just because they're not my blood. This is still there's still pieces in the puzzle to me. And that was interesting to see him kind of take on more of a Tywin-esque kind of like a turn, which I appreciate.
Yeah, but what he's saying here is actually, if we stand back for a moment, quite devastating for Lena, you know, Rhaena and Bela. He's in a sense disinheriting the women of his house and claiming that he won't do it because he's backing, you know, his queen, his wife's claim to be queen. Like, it's a very, it's rough. Like, it's rough. He's actually saying, I will not give these girls, well, I guess it's just Bela, because Rhaena, I guess, is the younger one in the show. He's saying, I will not give Bela her birthright so that I can keep our name close to the Iron Throne. It's pretty devastating considering that he's totally been behind this whole notion of like, my wife should have been the queen. You know, I still really like Corliss, but this was a really rough moment. Like, he's out here saying he's for one thing, but when it came down to his house doing it, he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to lose his name.
Let me ask you this though, because they don't have his name though. That's the thing why I think he's taking, why it's that line in the sand, because they're Targaryens. And that's like legit, like, it's, you know, Bela and Rhaena are Targaryens. So there could have been a piece of him that's like, yeah, my name is, your family name will inherit Driftmark now. I'm going to lose, like, my whole family's name is going to be lost. Like, if that's the case, because it's not going to be a Valyrian that takes over Driftmark. It's going to be a Targaryen now.
I don't think that's true, though, because the women inherit in the Vale, women inherit in, obviously women inherit on Bear Island, but like, women can inherit and keep their family name.
Yeah, but aren't they, don't they already bear that name? They already bear that name when they inherit it.
Yeah, but he could, he could say that the, I mean, he would need the king's approval, which he probably wouldn't get, but I think he could probably ask that their names just be changed and they're styled. Yeah.
So then you'd have to ask, I mean, you'd have to get Damon to be cool with like his daughter's not having his name and then the king saying yes, and you got to go through all it. So I get it. I mean, now we're doing like the admin of like the whole restaurant. We're like out here. Oh man. But
but if it's a thing that he wanted, it's worth the trouble, right? Yeah. So I mean, look, at the end of Game of Thrones, Sansa became queen in the North. Like it's possible for these things to happen. You just have to, you know, it might take some work to get there. And I just found this really difficult for her to kind of pierce this veil that he's been living under, which is like, this isn't about me. It's not about the notion of a woman inheriting. It's about you and your family name.
I agree with that. No, that's very clear that that's what comes out of this. That's where he kind of like is now forced to come clean with like, this is where I'm standing.
Yeah. And I also think this conversation accomplishes something else, which is up until this point, we have seen these two as a united front. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not sure which side Rhaenys falls on. And I think that is interesting, right? Now we may have a conflict that's so intimate that it's between spouses. I don't know if Rhaenys trusts Rhaenyra. She gave her the cold shoulder at this funeral. She's not very warm to the boys. I don't know where she's going to fall, right? I hope that this is not like the beginning of like a rift between this couple that is like one of the few very loving couples in this story. But who knows? I think this conversation put Rhaenys from like either being a green or a black into the, I actually don't know where she's going to fall. Not that I know where Corlys is going to fall either, because I had kind of assumed Corlys goes where Damon goes and where Jace and Luke go, right? He's going to support his grandchildren. Yeah. And he's also, you know, he's aligned with Damon previously. That said, that was before his son died.
Yeah.
And who, you know, he could very well blame Damon or Rhaenyra for Lenore's death. It certainly seems convenient. So I thought this conversation was really rich with things you could analyze and think more deeply about. And it's not that very, like, it's not a very long scene. So I loved it. It was one of my favorite parts of this episode.
Yeah, I liked it. And the acting is really great between the two of them and the way that they interact and respond. And I think there's a deep, you know, Corlys has a different relationship to really what is Rhaenys's biological family than he does. And, you know, you keep seeing it rear its head. Like, she understands how her family moves. And, you know, like she says, Damon doesn't care about anything other than Damon. Now, yes, she's assigning blame to something he couldn't have controlled, but she's not wrong in a lot of the ways that we've seen Damon, that he puts himself first and he's very self-interested in a lot of ways. I mean, proof of that is that his kids are chilling on their own while he's on the beach and doing his own thing and walking off, right? So let's talk about this beach walk. First time we hear Rhaenyra actually with anyone other than Lenore be honest about her marriage situation.
Yeah. I really was struck immediately by Rhaenyra's transparency here. Mm-hmm. And it made me realize, wow, Rhaenyra really has been isolated this whole time. She can't be herself. Like, Alicent can at least vent to Larys and Sir Crispy. Rhaenyra is like speaks and whispers even when her and Lenore are alone. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of nice to see her feel at once like totally at home with somebody she hasn't seen in a decade.
Yeah. Yeah. And she lets him know about it too. You know, and when they're talking about it, she says, you know, I don't, you know, I've been alone. You abandoned me. And that's after Damon's like, you know, each of us is capable of depravity. And she goes, well, I believe you capable of it because you left me alone, you son of a bitch. Like, and look what my life has turned out into, a tragedy. You know, like, it's been a tragedy. Like, this is terrible. Like, you got, and I love that she calls back to really, She's calling back some things here. She's calling back the things that he introduced her to. She's like, we tried, me and Lenore, to do this, but and to conceive, but there was no joy in it. Now you have to, that has to remind Damon of when he is telling her about, yeah, there's duty and there's all these things, marry who you want, but then there's also like sex for joy. And so like you're hearing like her introduction to this, to intimacy, to having a relationship, to sexuality, actually has, she's pushing back in his face a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, she was very transparent, even with her frustration with him and her feelings about how hurt she was. And I couldn't, there's so many great conversations here in this episode. We'll talk a little bit later about Otto and Allison's as well. But it just felt like, finally, these people are talking, but they not to the right person always. No. Like, I just wish that Rhaenyra and Allison could get together and hatch a plan, come up with something instead of being adversaries all the time. And it was so refreshing to see Rhaenyra have a friend again.
Yeah.
Like, just a friend.
Yeah.
Like, I had forgotten how long she's been isolated and frozen out from like her own family structure. You know, her dad has become, I wouldn't say a stranger, they obviously have a very warm relationship right now, but he's still, I don't think she has the same relationship with her dad as she did with her mom. Her and Allison are no longer close. In fact, now they're basically enemies. And while I think her and Lenore have a very loving, you know, relationship, they're obviously bonded as family. Like, I took to heart what Rhaenyra said when she said to Jace, the Velaryons are our kin. Mm-hmm. She still hasn't had anyone she could be completely transparent with without managing. Because I feel like her conversations with Lenore in last week were mostly like telling him what to do, telling him what, you know, to pay attention to what's being said around court. This felt very natural. So as much as it makes me uncomfortable that these two, you know, couple is a uncle and niece, there's definitely something between them that she doesn't have with anyone else. And certainly we've never seen him at ease like this with anyone either.
No, for sure. I mean, and one thing I believe like Lenore is younger than Rhaenyra, right? So that's always going to be like, so there is always going to be that like.
You're right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Lenore and Lena were children, whereas Rhaenyra and Allison were teenagers.
Yeah.
Right.
So I was just thinking, you know, there's probably a little bit of that, like, you're my little cousin, you know, like you're my, mm-hmm. you're my older cousin that like, that, yeah, they're like, you know, a married couple now in this world. But it's also like, you know, she does feel like maybe the desire to take care of him and like, you should be doing this, don't do that, and direct traffic, where she doesn't feel that same thing with, say, you know, Harwin Strong or Damon, you know? So what do you think about her outright not believing Allison is capable of murder in this episode?
I'm sure she doesn't believe that by the end of it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a nice reminder. Well, not reminder, because I don't think this has been confirmed, but it was sort of like a nice confirmation that Rhaenyra doesn't think the worst of Allison either. Yeah. Like, she doesn't. Allison defended Rhaenyra when, you know, before the green dress moment. And I think that Rhaenyra doesn't like Allison, certainly sees her as an adversary in the court, but also doesn't think the worst of her. Still remembers that girl that she was friends with all those years ago.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And I just have to say how extraordinary it is that, like, Rhaenyra hasn't... We haven't actually heard much from Rhaenyra about how she feels until this episode, since they did the time jump. Like, last episode was all her kind of managing a crisis, mm-hmm. and all of her feelings were kind of expressed through expression and body language. But she spoke pretty openly about how she felt here. And I had been wondering what her feelings on Allison were. And it's clear that she still remembers, like, the Allison that she grew up with.
Yeah.
And she's not just thinking of the queen, her stepmother. She's thinking of, you know, I don't believe she's capable of murder. And The truth is Allison didn't actually commit a murder, but Damon is right in placing some of the blame of the murder on Allison.
Yeah, he says, you know, Otto and Allison will have you believe that, like, it's the hauntedness of Harrenhal that killed, you know, the Strongs. But I think he sees it very clearly because, let's face it, he's done it. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, let's just own it. He's done it, right? And so, like, I don't know, man. I think that, you know, I think Allison is chiefly responsible in planting the seeds for, as we spoke about last episode, for a lot of these actions. And one of them is really this whole exchange of, like, what happens with Vhagar being stolen, the motivation that Aemon had to feeling shamed. Yes, it was partly because of his cousins, but it's also his mom. Like, you'll have a dragon. What is this stupid infatuation with all these things? Like, it's kind of like she's been driving this and then poisoning their minds with, like, who these other kids are and why you shouldn't like them. And to the point where it's awkward between kids at a funeral that should actually just be, they should just be, like, comforting each other or playing and enjoying each other. They're, like, dug in on sides. So let's talk a little bit about this whole Vhagar, someone stole Vhagar moment.
Oh my goodness. We've been waiting for this moment, right? Yeah. This is, like, really one of the bigger moments in this conflict. I was surprised and also really happy that the Targaryen girls took part in this, mm-hmm. Because it makes sense, actually. I actually just, the show is giving the women, the girls, more agency than I feel that the book does. And so I actually really like that Bela and Rhaena are there for this and actually instigate it. Instigators.
Yeah. Listen, I would be pissed if I show up to a cave and somebody just got off my mom's dragon and my sister doesn't have a dragon. You know what I mean? Like, what are you talking about? Like, if I'm one of the sisters and I don't have a dragon and you just claim my mom's dragon, I'm mad.
Yeah. I mean, we should say what Aemon did here is in poor taste.
Yeah.
But is in his rights.
It is in his rights. It is.
But it's the timing of it. Like, if Vhagar were just, if this was like a month after the funeral and Vhagar just popped up in King's Landing or, you know, maybe on Dragonstone where they're visiting or whatever, and Rhaena still hasn't acted and Aemon says, okay, I'm going to go for it. That's one thing. But doing it on the same day as her mother's funeral when Vhagar was howling, which was really heartbreaking, howling at the very loss of her previous writer, I was so angry. I was, like, both proud of him for going for it because Vhagar's legit scary. Like, she makes Drogon look like a pussycat. So on the one hand, I was like, oh my God, he's actually going to do it. Oh my goodness, he's going to do it. Like, go for it. And they kind of endeared us to Aemon a little bit. He was bullied last week. He does try to, like, approach Jace at this funeral and then walks away because Jace kind of gives him this cold stare. Like, I felt like they were endearing him to us for this moment where we could be like, wow, what an amazing thing that he's so determined to get this dragon. And then immediately turned into a little shit.
Yeah.
I was just like, I hate this kid.
He, like, walked off the dragon like, yeah. He had big dragon energy. Like, yeah, that's my dragon now.
Big dragon energy.
That's it.
Like, he, and more power to Jace and Luke for defending their cousins, but I don't know what to say.
He punched Bela. That's all we got to say. Like, listen, when that happened, at first when he pushed down Rhaena, I was like, all right, you know what? That's messed up.
She charged him. Yeah, like, she charged him. I was like, okay, what, like.
But then she hit him and he was like, no, nothing in him was like, yo, let me not punch Bela. Let me, whatever. He just punched her right in the face. So, yeah, that's when I thought Jace and Luke did the right thing. They're like, yo, listen, we're not letting. And then they jumped him. Like, they got to. If I had to talk to the Velaryon and Targaryen brigade, Always make sure you're holding down the legs and the arms when you're jumping someone. You can't be out there like letting him get the foot position and kick you off of him. This messed the whole thing up and got him back to his feet. Listen, the jumping etiquette is just keep going. He did it right. Eamon was right. You got to keep moving. If you keep moving, you might break free. He did it totally right. He did the right thing. I honestly.
Let me ask you a question. How old do you think Eamon is at this point?
Old enough to know better. Old enough to know better. I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe he's like, I don't know, 13 maybe?
Yeah, I was thinking he's like Aegon. Well, I guess it depends on how closely she had these kids, because Helena's in between them. So yeah, 13 sounds right. I was thinking he was 14, but 13 sounds right.
Yeah, and he said he would do. He's ready for Helena. He's like, I would do my duty if mother only asked.
can we talk about what we talked about on like offline a little bit? Yeah. Because you asked a really great question. I just want to make sure we don't forget to raise it in the podcast. You asked this question about Otto and putting Aegon to bed.
Yeah. Because
he was drunk.
Eamon
was right there. He doesn't get sent to bed.
And it made me wonder later on when I was rewatching the episode, did Otto like know that he was going to sneak out and try to claim the dragon and just let him go? Like, or did he?
I wondered this too. Did he speak to his grandfather about it?
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder it now. This was not something I considered when I was watching the episode, but when you said it, I was like, oh, wait, that would make a lot of sense.
Because he tells his grandfather, like, come down and get Aegon, because you could tell like he snitched on him. Like, you know, listen, in the tradition of House Green, thou shalt snitch. Like, so he freaking snitched, and Otto comes, he's all pissed off, he shakes him, and Aegon says brother, like thinking it was going to be Eamon, but it's actually Otto. And he says, go to bed, you know, sending a king to bed, pulling a Tywin. And then he walks right past Eamon, and Eamon's just chilling. And then he goes and sneaks out.
Yeah, I think that's a really good theory that they talked about it. I like it. I like it, actually, even if they didn't mean it to be true. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Even if that wasn't intended to read from it, that's what I'm reading from it now. So good, good theory.
So after this happens and Luke slices him in the face and he loses his eye, and then the Kingsguard shows up. Why weren't the Kingsguards around? Like, where was Sir? Didn't Sir Crispy have the Night Watch? Oh yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Hit fraudulent. Really, 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 really crazy that he's like missing in action at nighttime.
Mm-hmm. They was reading the scriptures of the seven. Maybe I don't know.
Nah, there was no scriptures being written. That was it. Oh man.
I would love to know actually what is happening here. Why? Okay, a couple things from the scene, that the fallout of this is, one, Kristen needs to understand his place. He's talking back to the king.
It's very strange.
In a way that I just think is absurd. Like, you were, Alicent may be your defender, but bro, you should be in jail.
Yeah.
So don't push it. The king already doesn't like you, and he got rid of Otto Hightower when he didn't like him too, so you can go.
Yeah, and he's talking about we've never had to protect princes from princes, and like giving excuses.
He says they're cousins, and I'm like, they're not even cousins. This is their nephews, but okay, whatever.
Yeah.
get the Targaryen family tree right.
Exactly. And then Allison has a lot of freaking nerve. She's talking about calling Lenore out in his father's house. Like, where is their father? Like, probably out with one of his squires. Like, really? And then Kristen laughs. Like,
yeah, that was gross.
Yeah, really gross.
That's when I knew she was going to be off the chain in this episode, because she came in hot with that one. And like, there's a lot of people I might talk trash to. Corlys Velaryon is not one of them. And you're insulting the sea snake in his house. Like,
yeah. It's super wild. And I mean, and it escalates really quickly because, you know, finally there needs to be a debt paid. She starts going into wanting to take a little boy's eye. Like, yes. Yes, the little boy took another little boy's eye, but that was between two kids. Now you want a grown man in the Kingsguard to go and take an eye. And
big Cersei, they have another wolf energy.
Yeah. Where was the stop this madness in the name of your king?
It's in the name of your king. Every time there's like a conflict. Okay, let's just say what it is. You're really wild out here when you suggest something. And even Sir Criston Cole is like, I who murdered someone at a wedding with hundreds of witnesses am not down for it.
Yeah. Like, and he was not down for it for sure. But Westerling also was like, just in case, I'm here. I know I got you in case you do this. I wish
yeah,
you
he
would.
He was like, I wish a mother would. Like, I wish you would try.
I know.
And then the other thing is that the other observation I wanted to make about this scene is like you're a really bad king when every time there's a conflict, the audience is wishing that you turned into Robert Baratheon.
Yeah.
Like every time there's been a conflict, I've just been like, Bobby B would never.
Yeah.
He would never let this happen.
Yeah. He would have just been like, Ned, you discipline your daughter, I'll do the same with my son. That's it.
And you mentioned Sir Westerling. What a criminal underuse of Graham McTavish in this whole show.
I don't understand.
I actually thought that this was going to be his moment, right? I thought he was in this episode a lot. So I was like, okay, they're setting it up. They're setting it up. And I'm just like, I don't get it. Why use such a talented actor?
They're priming us maybe for season two. I mean, Sir Howard Westerling doesn't get that much action that much long. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do in the show.
There's only one mention of Sir Harold Westerling in the book.
Yeah.
And it's in passing. So, like, I get it. He's not a made-up character, but he's a character that they filled in. But this just feels wrong. I'm like, Graham.
I'm just saying,
did you read
like,
the script before you accepted this role?
They were probably like, listen, we're going to give you some stuff. We know you got this and The Witcher. Like, this guy's got a full schedule. So maybe they just try to, like, cut him just in a little bit. But, man, he needs more to do. Like Graham McTavish is such a good actor. Like, such a good actor.
Yeah.
Like, they gotta get him involved more.
It was disappointing to see that he didn't have more to do in this episode. Because I figured this was going to be his moment. Okay, so I'm sorry. I interrupted you. You were talking about Allison, you know, about to run up on everybody.
Yeah, well, I mean, Allison just basically... So, I mean, the thing that kind of shocks me is that she doesn't let it go. Like, right? Like, she calls for Sir Criston. Sir Criston says no. She basically is like, it's not enough for what you know, the king says. I mean, the king questions Aemon kind of motions towards his mom with his eyes, which starts to put her in focus.
Well, no, eye.
With his eye. And he looks over with one eye, you know? So he couldn't quite tell whether he was saying his mom or not. And then he just throws Aegon under the bus, who only would have heard that from his mom also. And Aegon basically has to come clean. And just, I thought it was very fascinating that Aegon was like, I mean, Dad, are you serious right now? Like, look at them. Like, they don't look anything like any of us. Like, they definitely don't look like us. Like, everyone knows. And it leads him to kind of like, you know, put his foot down again. Like, hey, you know what? Nobody ever better say this again or they're losing their tongue.
He looks right at his wife.
Well, she's raised it with him a million times and he's brought it up to her a million times not to.
Yeah, I thought that was pointed. Yeah. Like, everyone saw that.
Yeah.
You know, he looked directly at her when he said this. And I do agree with Allison that, like, for what happened, an apology and everyone go back to their corner is not acceptable, right? Like, I think that I would definitely want to say to Rhaenyra, like, all these kids should be punished, but, like, Luke really needs to understand how dangerous knife play is, right? And like, definitely an apology is not enough. Someone got grievously hurt. That said, an eye for an eye is not the solution.
Leaves the whole world blind. That's what they say.
Luke is what, four, five? Like, he's pretty young. And she wants someone to mutilate him in front of everybody.
And he has a broken nose. The kid broke his nose.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, Viserys does say to her, I can't bring back Aemon's eye. Yeah. Like, nothing is going to do that. You can't take Luke's and pop it into Aemon's head. Like, that's not going to happen. But she was really out there. But I'm glad all this happened because we finally have our showdown.
This moment is what we've, like you said, been waiting for. Because we've all been asking, well, why the hell is Allison this hell-bent on being, you know, pissed off at Rhaenyra? What does she have going on? And it really revealed itself when she starts unloading, like, you know, what have I done? What's expected of me? Whatever, forever upholding the kingdom, the family, the law. Where's honor? Where's duty? Where's sacrifice? Trampled under your pretty foot again. I would add that she is still complimenting certain body parts of Rhaenyra. She's like, you know, she's like, your pretty little foot again. And now you take my son's eye and even feel that you're entitled to that. I thought that this was like, oh, okay, so it is jealousy. It is that you feel like you've had to do all of these things against your will or at the prodding of other people who you felt you were following the way that you should be, and Rhaenyra has had free run or been free to do whatever she wants, and you're really jealous of her. And it's both like a shot. It is meant to be a shot when Rhaenyra responds, but there's also a part of you that can't in this scene read it another way, but if you really just read it out of context, that must have been exhausting, like keeping up this pretense of self-righteousness and whatever what she says there. And she kind of goes to like, yeah, and you know what, but now everybody sees you. And that to me is like, it wasn't meant to be friendly, obviously. They're in a face off.
No, but she could have said it. If let's suppose that they had this conversation not in the midst of a conflict.
Yeah.
If you take what Rhaenyra says, it could be a real moment of empathy. Like, what you're saying is so true. It's such an astute observation about what Rhaenyra is saying. Because if you just take this as a conversation between two women who have a long relationship, she's saying, wow, you just unloaded all of this. You must be tired.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're free of it. Everybody knows who you are. You don't have to keep up you don't have to pretend anymore. But because of the way that it's said in the moment, obviously it's not meant that way. But it's true. Allison must be exhausted.
Yeah.
Like this is, I don't think she does a very good job of hiding who she truly is, at least within the family circle and the inner circle in court. But she certainly probably does with, you know, the lords and ladies of the realm. Like she is pretending everything's okay all the time when she's really seething. She seems she's more angry than Rhaenyra.
Yeah. 100%.
But let me ask you this question, because this is one that I've really been thinking about. Mm-hmm. So Allison's big mad at Rhaenyra because Rhaenyra gets to do whatever she wants.
Mm-hmm.
How does Allison's life change if Rhaenyra doesn't do whatever she wants? Or how is Allison's life any different if she doesn't marry the king? She's still going to be that person who does what's asked of her. She's still going to be that person who does what is right for the family and tradition. She's still going to be that person. Rhaenyra's privilege has nothing to do with Allison. Rhaenyra is a Targaryen princess.
Yeah, 100%.
Like she's a literal princess. You were not born a princess. And while that may feel unfair, like, the burdens that Rhaenyra is born with, but also the privilege of and being kind of above the fray in a lot of ways, that is a matter of birth. Yeah. Like that's not anything that Rhaenyra has done or not done to Allison. Like just because she doesn't choose to be dutiful and you did, there's no reason to be angry at her. Be angry at the establishment that is making you do all these things.
Agreed. But she doesn't see it that she's never saw it that way. And she saw and that's very clearly established in the very first scene that we meet them in when, you know, or not the first scene, but that first scene in the Godswood where, you know, the whole fuck the scepter thing. Like, it's like you know, like, here's Allison, I'm going to be the good student and make sure you know all this. You need to know all that. And she's like, fuck the SEPTA. But then she also does know it. So it's not that she doesn't know it. It's that she's making a choice to liberate herself from, like, this idea that she has to be conformed to every single detail. And I think that's always rubbed Allison the wrong way. And she's always thought that, you know, enough pain or enough suffering or enough missteps would make Rhaenyra say, oh, okay, I need to just be different, but that's, I need to just change and do it the way that everybody wants me to. But that's not what she's been raised to do. Their life experiences, like, for a second, let's just, you know, crawl into that. Is that, like you said, she's a princess and Allison is the daughter of a second son who doesn't stand to inherit anything. And she is actually, and through being in proximity and through the father's conniving and moving around, Otto's conniving, has actually found herself in a very ideal position from a standpoint of status, than one that she would have never found and not being in that proximity. And also, I do think that, right, like, some of her anger is misplaced. It should be at, like, you know, her dad and some of the people who forced her to do this, but she's not, like you're saying, she's not projecting it there because she feels like, how do you feel so free to just be whoever you want? And she's actually created... She's actually found a way to gather all the people that dislike this person based on being slighted by her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that, I guess, you know, we know this is never going to happen, or at least it's unlikely, but there was a path forward for all of these people where Allison and Rhaenyra have a conversation. Allison is real with her about her concerns. Like, listen, the fact that people are talking about your kids puts my kids in danger, because if your claim is challenged, which it most likely was going to be anyway, now people have this additional thing of these are not true born children. There was a way that they could have come together and just been like a powerhouse, could have come up with compromises, could have tried to protect all of their kids and the kingdom. And I don't know, maybe if you don't show up in a green dress at the girl's wedding and call her stepdaughter,
yeah,
none of this needs to be like this. Yeah. I don't know. It just feels... I felt so frustrated at Allison because obviously she's lost her mind in this scene. But just sort of like, why, you're mad at the wrong people. Like, yes, this whole situation is screwed up, but not because Rhaenyra has decided that she's going to try to find some joy in her life.
And let me just say, there's been theories out there that are saying that all of this is because of what we've been hinting at earlier, that she really, actually there was a statement out here in the streets about that it's really because she had a thing for, that Allison had a thing for Sir Criston Cole. If all this on Hot D is because of some Hot D, I'm going to be upset. I'm going to be very, 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 very upset with Allison for letting it go this far. Okay? Like, this is ridiculous. Come on, Allison. Let's go.
Well, if her and Criston are in some kind of, like, cold relationship and not acting on it for whatever reason, I can see that frustration that Rhaenyra can do whatever she wants becoming even more palpable.
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, we're not confirming there's a relationship between... I just want to be clear. Yeah, this is just a theory. We're not.
This is all. this is wild speculation moment. Like, for sure.
Yeah, this is very wild speculation. It's not based in the text. Like, we're just... This is just a theory that maybe, like... Maybe the showrunners want us to think about this, or maybe they just didn't think that deeply about where Criston was, right, when they were writing this scene. But I think that that could be, you know... like a real thing. Like, if I also care for somebody and I don't act on it because it's dishonorable, but here you are bearing Harwin's children, marrying your uncle now, like, you just do whatever you want. Like, I don't think that's what's happening with Rhaenyra, but I can see how Allison would see that. All that said, Allison is still out here crazy asking for a little boy's eye.
Listen, all I'm gonna say is this. If you're watching this show and you're looking for the righteous and noble side, You're gonna have to pick between which flavor of murderer do you want. Okay, like this is what it is. Like which one do you like? Me personally, I'm rolling with the blacks. You know, you may roll with the greens. It's cool. I don't know why, but this is just what it is. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, both sides do horrible things.
Horrible things. So the aftermath of this exchange is, before we get to like Otto and everyone talking, is you know who squashes it all? Amen. Because he's like, you know what, mother? Don't mourn for me. I may have lost an eye, but it was a fair exchange. I gained a dragon, and the biggest fucking dragon. Oldest living battle scene. I mean, this was fucking Visenya Targaryen's dragon. It's not any old dragon. I secretly wish that his hand slipped and he fell into the ocean and we had another funeral, but that did not happen.
Yeah, I mean, we can't overstate this. This was a big moment.
Big moment.
They, just to clarify, up until this point, the Targaryen children that are Viserys' children have three dragons. They have Sunfire. I mean, up to this point, they have two dragons. Sorry. They have Sunfire and Dreamfire. Dreamfire is an older dragon, but I don't recall Dreamfire being in battle. I don't think she's a battle-tested dragon.
No.
She was a dragon of Princess Rhaena Targaryen, who was, you know, poor girl. I don't even want to go into her story. But I don't think the Dreamfire was really battle-tested. And then they have Sunfire, who's a young dragon. Getting Vhagar is worth... there's no comparison.
No.
Vhagar was part of the conquest. Vhagar has burned down parts of Westeros multiple times.
I know. This is so wild. It's wild that this kid, like you said, it can't be understated. It's wild that this kid even had the guts to attempt to do this, right? And it's so wild because, like, you know, it catches the attention of Daemon right away, and then Rhaenyra, not shortly after, she's like, who is it? Because they know that a dragon's been claimed, that Vhagar's been claimed, and man, your heart drops because it's like this is a big piece to their side, which Otto is.
Yeah,
quick.
Daemon, you could tell from Daemon's expression he knew it wasn't Rhaena.
Yeah.
All the other writers have dragons. Well, all the other kids have dragons except for Rhaena and Aemon, and we don't know about Luke yet. He's like kind of a question mark. So it could only be Daemon's daughter or Allison's son. And Daemon did not look pleased. I mean, it's a big deal.
No.
Caraxes is probably the next most battle tested dragon in the mix. And Vhagar is twice the size of Caraxes.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. When you were part of the conquest and you were you're Visenya Targaryen's dragon, and it's wild because he's like, this is like her stomping grounds, you know, Driftmark, Dragonstone, that whole area. So like this felt very comfortable for her. So I'm surprised she didn't eat Aemon, but you know, because I think like the place where Vhagar was that in Laena's conversation with Viserys when they were trying to get her betrothed to him, she was saying the area was like really close to where Driftmark is. So it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. So anyway, mm-hmm. Point is, Vhagar is on the board for the Greens, and Otto basically says, yo, the boy was not wrong. He could have paid 10 times that price and it would have been worth it to win this dragon to our side. He advises her. He's pretty impressed with the fact that Allison has shown this side of herself, and he's like, you know, they're kind of like to comfort her and give her advice on how to move forward so they can win what he sees as the coming war. And I think this shows you everything you need to know. Like, this is the moment where it flips for the two of them in their relationship, because obviously he's going to use his leverage whenever he can, but she was fully expecting him to ream her, but that's no longer what the dynamic is. He's basically like, yo, we got to win this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely sees her as, I wouldn't say quite an equal. I don't think Otto sees any woman as an equal, mm-hmm. but he sees her as a player in a way that he never did before. And it should, I mean, we definitely start to see all the alliances in this episode. I just want to go back to the scene that was in the hall before with the kids and the fight. The staging of that scene when it was over with Corlys, Rhaenys, Daemon, all on one side with, you know, with Rhaenyra and then Allison and Aemon and her kids on the other side was just like, what a powerful staging.
Yeah, it was good.
It was theatrical. I just thought it was great. It really sort of showed, you know, where the alliances are shaping out so far. I think we could see some changes with what happens next in this episode.
I mean, and the badassery of somebody like basically slicing your arm open and you just stand there and watch the blood drip. You're like, oh, word, that's what you're going to do? I was like, damn.
Corliss's face was priceless.
Yeah, it was really good.
His face was, he was like, your move, queen. Like, come through. What's going to happen next? His face was great.
Also, that's her blade. Like, if she's actually going to be inheriting the throne, like, that blade has consequences beyond your little petty games right now. Like, you guys are fucking around. And
we talked about this offline, but I honestly feel like it was the blade, the focusing on the blade that kept Rhaenyra grounded.
Yeah, I agree.
In this exchange.
I agree.
Because this could have turned into like a cat fight.
Yeah, I agree. And it almost did, not between Rhaenyra and Allison, between Sir Criston and Daemon. Sir Criston came out like he was about to jump into it, like he was about to jump into the fight, and Daemon was like, bruh, no, you don't do that.
Nah.
And then the other Kingsguards held him back, which was great. That he's just, man. Every time you think Crispy can't be more weak sauce, you know, fuckboys don't need a reason. They just do it. They just do what they do. So yeah, what happens next in this episode, well, what we want to talk about is really, really, really interesting. It really is a difference in the book to the show. Well, it shows some events that we didn't understand in the book anyway. You know, Rhaenyra. And first, Rhaenyra and Laenor have a very, very, very heartfelt, what turns into a heartfelt exchange. Starts out with a, I should have been there. Those should be our house words.
While we're suggesting house words, the Greens should come up with their own house words, which is 1-800, I'm telling.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
oh, it's crazy.
You can always count on the Greens to snitch.
Yeah, they definitely need those house words. But you know, in this exchange, Laenor admits that it's been complicated, their arrangement, that he feels like, you know, he hasn't been able to do everything the way that they agreed to. I think they both get a chuckle out of their idea that they were just going to do their duty and then do as they please. I think the more mature versions of them, especially Rhaenyra, is like, yeah, that was ridiculous because, like, look where we ended up. And I think they're having, like, a real kind of, like, moment of conversation. And I think the moment that really stands out is when Laenor is basically saying he hates that the gods made him the way that he is. And Rhaenyra says, I don't. And it was a real moment. She starts off really kind of irritated because of everything that's happened to him not being there, to being like, okay, he already feels bad enough. I'm going to support him. And she talks to him about being an honorable man and having a good heart and how it's a rare thing. And you can see again that they love each other, like not maybe in the relationship sense of love, but love nonetheless. And I just think it's a really touching scene, in my opinion.
So when I read Fire and Blood, you know how I felt about Rhaenyra. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't get this. Like, why is she the realm's delight? Mm-hmm. I don't understand. What am I missing here? this show has made her into a character I can genuinely cheer for. This part was really moving, but then when she's talking to Damon later and she says, "I do love Lenore." This is a family that don't admit when they love people. They don't, like, who uses the word love in this story? I thought that was just beautiful. Like, I really, I'm sorry for what happened with Lenore in one respect, which is that Rhaenys and Corlys lost two children in like a span of a week. But I love this conversation, and I love that the show made this decision to have this switch, which not everybody got the night of. A lot of people,
no, were, like, a lot of people were like, wait, Lenore turned into a cold-blooded murderer. Like, no, no, actually, only Damon did. He killed the serving guy. Like, he killed the man. What do we call him? The man, the manservant? He killed the manservant. Damon kills him. But yeah, let's talk about this a little bit. So in the book, it just gives you information that Carl and Lenore had a duel, and that in that duel, Lenore was killed. They intimate that it's Carl was jealous of somebody he was who Lenore was interested in, and that he had started losing interest in Carl. That's what they start kind of like. That's the word and the rumor. But but they don't really. It's very unclear and murky as to what would have caused that and why they would have had a duel, and because they were very close. And so it is a little bit out of place. So this actually adds something to the story that for book readers, we got a new piece, because they're saying this is a definitive telling of why it feels out of place, why the history just doesn't seem to make sense or add up. Is that it was a plot that was put together by Damon and Rhaenyra to forge their bond, pitched to Lenore and Carl, and then this, we see it pitched to Carl, and then we see this play out the way that it is. My first watch, I thought that Damon actually was actually paying him to kill Lenore. My second watch, I actually see that Damon is actually saying to set him free, and that this is actually about that he's saying, like, you know, if you love him, like, set him free. Like, this is the best you can do for him. And then I went to that scene where he's talking to Carl. He says, you know, there's a place where, you know, a man's name doesn't matter. It's only how much gold he has, which is kind of like, you know, Lenore's name not mattering is going to be the biggest part of this, because other than his dragon not coming with him. But that's a whole other story for a whole other time.
I don't even know what to say about that.
I don't.
That's the one problem with this, is what happens to Cecil.
What happens to Cecil?
In the book, there is a suggestion that Damon was behind this, that he wanted to, that he was behind the murder of Lenore, that he paid Carl to assassinate Lenore. So I could see that if this is the true telling, you know, they could still say that, oh, okay, this was a rumor that went around. And Rhaenyra and Damon actually say, you know, everyone's going to suspect us. And Damon's like, let them.
That's good. He thinks it's good. They think that's it'll put fear in the hearts of their enemies, but they'll know the truth. I thought that was really interesting. He says, we'll know the truth of it, but it'll put fear in their heart. There's things that happen later on, this thing that happened later on in the book that now I'm wondering, with this being true, if Lenore had any hand in it, right? I don't know that they will do that, but I won't say any more than that. But there's just things that I'm like wondering now, okay, are they going to, is this an invitation to reintroduce Lenore into the story somewhere down the road where we don't maybe see him back in Westeros, but we see him affect some of the events?
Yeah, I think that's open for possibility. I think that I'm glad they did this. Yeah. I just want to be really clear.
Me too.
A couple reasons why I'm really glad that they did this. One is that Lenore in the book doesn't seem like a terrible guy, but he's whatever. He's not really, him and Rhaenyra don't really have much of a relationship. They don't really see each other unless they have to. Like, it's, you know, he's never around, basically. I should have been there, right? But they really made us like him, and so I'm glad that we don't have to mourn him, you know, a week after mourning his sister. That's sad. Mm-hmm. This creates a lot of problems for the canon if they haven't thought this through. I'm gonna hope that they just thought it through, but like, they're gonna need to explain if Sea Smoke is still around. They're gonna need to explain to me how Sea Smoke doesn't know that his writer, like, thinks his writer is dead or abandoned his, like, let his writer abandon him. Like, I just need to understand that more. And then it creates a few other issues, like Damon being like, whatever, they'll think that we did it. Well, what if the we is House Velaryon?
Yeah.
What happens if first of all, Rhaenys is already blaming him for killing her daughter. Like, what happens if she blames him for this too, or she blames Rhaenyra, and then these two messily go and get married like the next day? You know, like, it's not a good look. Like, I don't think that this was, I think this plan to set Lenore free, as they put it, I'm fine with that. I just think the fallout from this is, it's a high price to pay so that they could get married and join their house, their one house. I keep saying join their houses, but it's all one house. I just think it's a selfish act too, because now the kids are mourning their father, their father again.
Yeah, that's true. I will say this though, full disclosure to all our listeners, had they not done this, we were coming here fully prepared to roast the showrunners for killing like queer and black character almost on this show outside of the kids and Corliss. We were like, wait, what is happening? You guys are going to kill Lenore? No, this is a problem. So full disclosure, we're glad that we didn't have to have that podcast today. Anyway.
When Damon said to her, Lenore would have to be dead, I was like, no, even though I had such a visceral reaction. I was like, please don't make them responsible for this.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that Lenore was going to die, air quotes, but like, yeah, I was glad that they pivoted, because I don't think I could have taken it.
No, and the shouts to the family of that guy that just was like standing guard, that got his neck snapped and then thrown into a fire with Lenore's clothes on, like, kind of wild.
Yeah, they're never going to know what happened to that guy.
No, it's just like, man, footnote in history. We don't even know. We're out here calling him the burnt manservant, and we don't even know who he is, the rando. It's terrible. Terrible.
It is. No, I mean, it sort of shows you, even though we're both team black, right? They're also ruthless. Like, they will do things that are quite selfish to advance their claim as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Because that's what this whole plot is about. Rhaenyra and Damon clearly have feelings for each other, but she doesn't approach him being like, oh, uncle, I want to be with you. Mm-hmm. She's like, yo, we're both fire. Let's do this. Like, I don't think that they'll challenge my claim. Like, this is advantageous to both of us.
That exchange where she says, we were always meant to burn together, I was like, whoa, what a crazy line, first of all. And also, all the different ways that you can take that. You know, like, there's a lot of ways. And right on the heels of her expressing how fire is a prison and the sea offers an escape, and fire and expressing how fire took someone they both loved away from them, and now she's like saying, well let's face it, we were always meant to burn together. Like, this is what fate has shown us. Like, it's kind of, and she invokes Aegon the Conqueror, right? Like, and the same way that Daemon invoked Aegon the Conqueror when he was pitching his marriage pitch to her dad. So you wonder whether she heard that, or whether she just shares the same view that their line would be stronger, like Aegon the Conqueror, continuing Aegon the Conqueror's line, if they like joined together. It's very, 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 very good dialogue in this scene. Again, very well written dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to note, because I'm on Maegor watch, how often is the show going to draw parallels between Damon and Maegor? one character in the book has this weird Valerian wedding.
Yeah.
And it's Maegor. Just putting that out there. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying that the show is using a lot of Maegor material to fill in Daemon. I'm just positing that.
And marries his niece after the whole thing. It's a while. Well.
So, wait, should we just go through the dragons really quick? Because I think people are confused about which dragon is which and what did we see in this episode and who has what dragons, which shout out HBO for updating your website about who has what dragon, but not letting us know on the show. So very quickly, I just want to go through. So I mentioned earlier that Allison and her kids and Viserys' kids, they have Sunfire, who we saw in the distance when they were flying back to King's Landing. Dreamfire, who we've mentioned a few times before on the podcast, also saw in the distance, and Vhagar. Dreamfire is Helaena's. Sunfire, we learned last week, is Aegon's dragon. And obviously, Aemon's dragon is Vhagar. Rhaenyra's folks, her new family, I'm just going to go ahead and throw her family in there. Obviously, Daemon has Caraxes. She has Syrax, who we haven't seen in a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't seen Rhaenyra's dragon in a bit. Vermax is Jace's dragon. And then Baela has a dragon. I'm going to reserve the name because even though HBO named the dragon on their website, they may still unveil it. I don't think we've seen her dragon yet. Mm-hmm. And then maybe Melis. We don't know where Rhaenys is going to land in this, but she's also in the mix and she has a dragon. And then the potential riders who are still dragonless, as far as we know, are Rhaena, Daemon's daughter, Luke, and Joffrey. Joffrey's literally an infant, so his egg hasn't hatched yet, probably.
Where was Joffrey like while she was out on the beach?
She probably left him with a wet nurse.
Yeah.
I don't think Joffrey was there at all. I think he was probably at Dragonstone.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I would assume that she left him with a wet nurse because she like actually can't feed him, right? She let her milk dry up. Yeah. So she probably left him with a wet nurse. This is the last episode of these kids. There will be another time jump and the kids will all be a little bit older and we think there'll be some new kids in the fray. So I got to say, Ty Tennant
killed it.
Hats off to you. I will miss Aegon so much. I won't miss Aegon. Aegon will still be on the show, but not played by Ty Tennant. Just these kids were great.
Oh,
like
so
all of them. That fight scene is incredibly well staged. Like really, really well staged. Incredibly violent, which is a whole other discussion. But these kids were phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree. I loved it. I love that. Can we like age up or age out Daemon's like murder costume too?
Oh God, I forgot about the I'm doing crimes hoodie.
I'm doing crime hoodie. Like today I'm doing crime.
Rhaenyra, take out my hoodie. I feel like I'm gonna do some crimes.
Crazy. Well.
Yeah.
We appreciate you all listening and being with us. This is like continuing to be such a fun journey. Please continue. We've been interacting with all of you on Kinfolklore Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook. Also shoot us emails if you want to. We'd love to hear from you there too. And we'll see you next time.
Bye everyone.